This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At the stroke of midnight on January 1st, many of us will embrace 2008 with new resolutions, new promises, new beginnings, and at that same moment, a host of new laws take effect. State and federal legislators spent much of this past year crafting laws from the unusual to the controversial. At 12:01 Pacific time, you can get pulled over for texting while driving in California. At 12:01 Central, revelers in Illinois will have to step outside to smoke their first cigarette of the new year. Minnesotans will only be able to buy American flags made in the USA. And if you're stranded on the tarmac at JFK, pretzels and water will be headed your way by an act of the New York State Legislature. More on that in just a moment. Later in the hour, should the news media publish or broadcast the names of murderers whose motive is notoriety? But first, new laws. What new measures take effect January 1st where you live? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with New York State Assemblyman Michael Giannaris, who wrote a bill that takes effect on New Year's Day, which requires airlines to provide certain services to passengers when they're stranded on the tarmac. He joins us from his office in Astoria in Queens, New York. And nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
And I gather there was some personal experience behind behind this bill.
Well, anyone that's flown in and out of New York in the last couple of years has had a personal experience about being delayed on the tarmac. So, yes, unfortunately, myself and many people I know have experienced this.
And was there one occasion in particular?
No, well, really what got us all going on it was back on Valentine's Day, there was an incident that everyone had heard of where passengers were stranded on planes for upwards of 8 or 9 hours and not only were they not offered food or water during that time, but the bathrooms were not cleaned out. The air was not being ventilated, and it became a lot more than an inconvenience. It became a serious health concern. And from that moment forward, we started working to make sure that New York at least had this protection, since we are the home to the most delayed airports, unfortunately.
I think it's a mantle you'd proudly pass along to Chicago or Atlanta or someplace else.
Or anywhere else, sure.
Yeah. So what happens now, starting January 1st, if you're on the tarmac in New York City at JFK, say?
Well, starting January 1, if you're on the tarmac for 3 hours or more, the airlines are obligated to provide you with water and food. They're obligated to clean the bathroom and make sure that the power is working so the air is ventilated. Should they not do that, passengers will have the right to register a complaint with the new Office of Airline Consumer Advocate in New York. And if there are violations, the penalties can run up to $1,000 per passenger. So it's a pretty stiff fine that the airlines could incur. If they don't provide these basic services.
I'm sure the airlines have come back at you and said, hey, wait a minute, we've got 4 zillion federal regulations to deal with here. We don't need more from the state of New York.
Well, as a matter of fact, they sued us in federal court to strike down the law. And if you believe it or not, the airlines went to court, spent their money on lawyers to argue that passengers are not entitled to a drink of water after being stuck for 3 hours on the tarmac.
I assume they were not lucky enough to find a judge who only takes the train.
Well, thankfully they didn't, and the judge ruled in our favor just last week. They are filing an appeal because they're stubborn, but I'm confident that this law will stand up and that beginning on Tuesday, New York will be the first state in the country to have these protections. And what I'm really hoping in the longer term is that this gives a kickstart to efforts in Washington to deal with this and a lot more, because there are some things that we are restricted from dealing with as a state. We couldn't, for example, require the deplaning of passengers after a certain amount of time, but the federal government can do that. And we're hoping that as the states now step forward on their own, it'll give a boost to federal efforts to do more.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Michael Giannaris is a Democratic New York State Assemblyman from Queens in New York City. He joined us from his office in Astoria. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. What new laws take effect in your town, your city, your state this coming January 1st? And let's see if we can get Daniel on the line. Daniel Willis from, where are you calling from? Rice Lake in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think Wisconsin passed a great law. It increases the taxes on a pack of cigarettes by $1 a pack, and then proportionately higher on other tobacco products.
So it's going to be much more expensive to be a smoker come January 1st.
Yeah, great idea.
And you're all for it.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. What's the money? Is the money specialized? Sometimes they say, and this will go to pay for something specific.
Yeah, well, you can't believe them, but it's supposed to go to help pay for children's health insurance.
Well, thanks very much for that. Good luck.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is William Pound, Executive Director of the National Conference of State Legislatures. He joins us today from member station KCFR in Denver, Colorado. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here.
And Wisconsin is not the only state to take action on smoking or cigarettes.
No, in the past several years, a number of states have done that. In fact, there have been fairly dramatic increases in cigarette taxes, as you just said, much of it targeted to health care in some way, either generally or children's programs, and I suspect we will see even more of that in coming years. That's one of the few areas of tax increases we've seen in the last several years.
That seems to be one of the few that's relatively popular. Also, in the state of Illinois, come the stroke of midnight, people are going to have to go outside to smoke. This is January in Chicago. This is going to be cold.
Well, that may be another incentive to quit. We've seen the smoking cessation laws, particularly at workplace smoking, but even more broadly enacted again significantly, first in local government and now in state government in recent years.
Mm-hmm. So tobacco in general has been a wide area of legislation, particularly in the last 10 years or so.
Absolutely.
What other trends do you see?
Well, there are several things going on. We see there's been a good deal of legislation as it relates to immigrants in the past several years, and I think that reflects a frustration with what has not happened at the federal level. While immigration policy is the province of the national government, the dealing with the people that are here falls pretty much to state government. And we saw this past year, for example, more than 1,500 bills were introduced in legislatures on that subject, and just about 250 of them were enacted. These go both ways. That is, some of them are create greater sanctions, particularly sanctions on employers of illegal immigrants, but some of them also are aimed at providing basic services to people.
A little bit later, we'll be checking in the state of Arizona, where one of those laws takes effect on January 1st. But immigration is one big area. Not unconnected to it, I guess, is the issue of driver's licenses.
No, that's true. The driver's license issue has been really spurred on by the Real ID question that was enacted by the federal government, requiring the states to adopt a much more secure driver's license as a means of identification, at least for federal purposes. For example, getting on an airplane, entering a federal building, things like that. The regulations that would govern that were supposed to be out last May from the Department of Homeland Security. They have not come out to date. The law is supposed to be implemented in 2008. It probably will not be because of that. But the states are paying a good deal of attention in that area. A number of them have, actually six state legislatures last year, passed a statute that forbade their vehicle licensing department from complying with the Real ID Act, while several others have moved to create an enhanced driver's license on their own that can be used particularly for cross-border purposes. Washington, Vermont, and Arizona have already done that, upgraded it, so it will probably meet whatever national standard we ultimately adopt.
Here's an interesting one. In an effort to reduce youth access to alcohol, drivers under the age of 21 in New Hampshire will get a driver's license that is vertical compared to the horizontal version for those of legal drinking age. New Hampshire, of course, enacting that. I think in a lot of states, I know in Maryland, they have the picture reversed the other way if you're underage.
I think, yes, several states have done that. What we're seeing is the driver's license being used, since it's become a common form of identification, but we're seeing more distinctions or gradations in the licenses, and I suspect you will see even more of that in the next decade.
What laws are changing where you live? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Wayne's on the line. Wayne calling us from Casper in Wyoming.
Yeah, that name's Bill.
Oh, go ahead, Bill.
So how are you doing today?
I'm well. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. I'd like to make a here in Wyoming, we are slowly but surely seeing them pulling smoking in different places. I mean, they pretty much got all the restaurants taken care of. And it's spreading throughout the whole state. And we're seeing it here in Casper. They're starting to pull it out of the restaurants and public smoking. And they've got it down to just bars and clubs. And they're even going after that.
So you feel like this, it sounds like you're not in favor of this.
I'm really not in favor, and the reason I think is, you know, and I understand what these programs provide this money for, but, you know, my little thing about it is why pick on the smokers? And, I mean, sure, you know, I mean, to me it's like they're centering it out because they know they can get the most money out of that. Hmm. What happens if everybody quits smoking? What are they going to start taxing then?
I think the rationale for a lot of these laws is there are people who have to work in those bars and restaurants who may not want to smoke, and, well, they get to anyway, thanks to you, and they can get cancer that way.
I understand that totally, and you know, I mean, as a smoker, when I go into a restaurant, I do say no smoking section. That's where I want to be, and I can understand that, but why the big tax? You know, I mean, $1, $1.25, $1.50 a pack extra?
Why is that, do you think, William Pounder, that's certainly not just in Wyoming, as we mentioned, is also in Wisconsin?
Well, I understand. Well,
go ahead. We're trying to get an answer from William Pound.
Well, it's because smoking, clearly the health hazards of smoking have been greatly recognized in recent years, and it clearly the tax, we frequently call them sin taxes, whether it's gambling, alcohol, tobacco, what have you, are one, a source of revenue, but two, they're a means of regulating behavior. And clearly that we're trying to regulate the behavior of people to encourage them to quit smoking by increasing the upfront costs of it.
All right, Wayne, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call.
You bet.
Okay. We'll have more questions and more calls about new laws that take effect January 1st. You'll be making a lot of New Year's resolutions. Will you also make a resolution not to drive while texting in California? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about new legislation that takes effect January 1st. If you're in Oregon, prepare to be pulled over if you're under 18 and talking on a cell phone in your car. Ringing in the new year in Illinois, be nice to your pets. They now fall under the Domestic Violence Act. William Pound is walking us through the new legislation. He's executive director of the National Conference of State Legislatures. And, of course, you're invited to join the conversation. What new laws go into effect where you live? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Dallas, and Dallas is with us from Germantown in Ohio.
Yes, Neil.
Hi, go ahead, please.
As of the first of the year, the state of Ohio will no longer tax my military retirement pay.
Congratulations.
And that's a good law.
And how did that come about, do you think?
The governor pushed it through, and it was almost unanimous vote in the state Senate, and my local representative backed it, so they just wanted to do something for the military retirees.
Out of curiosity, is that retiree pay subject to federal income tax?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. So they get you coming and going, don't they?
Yeah, and it's still subject to school taxes and things like that.
All right, but not to Ohio state income tax.
Right, not to Ohio state income tax.
All right, well, thanks and congratulations.
All right, thank you.
I guess I can say Happy New Year.
Same to you, Neil.
And William Pound, veterans are the subject of several new laws this year.
That's correct. There's been a lot of attention recently, and I think that will continue into veterans' laws, either providing benefits, for example, enhanced educational benefits within at state universities, things like that. And also the gentleman, your last caller, provided a good example of attempting to alleviate or a penalty on a veterans benefits, things like that. There are also some bills that deal with housing assistance, but housing, educational, those are probably the primary areas.
Let's get Leslie on the line. Leslie with us from West in Michigan, or is it Western Michigan?
West Bloomfield.
West Bloomfield. Go ahead then.
Happy holidays.
You too.
A good Christmas.
Thank you.
Michigan is one of those states that's going to have a dual license, driver's license. One will be the regular license where you can go into a federal building, get on an airplane. One will act as a passport, being that a lot of people go back and forth across Canada and southeast Michigan. In fact, you know, every time we hear about the next sentence is, and the ACLU has threatened to sue.
Right. And are they threatening to sue on that?
In Michigan, yes.
Uh-huh.
They say that the only information on the magnetic strip is going to be what's on the license itself. And I took a look at my passport, and it's basically the same stuff. And I guess I really don't understand, how is this an invasion of my privacy?
And in a couple of years' time, as I understand the federal law, you're going to have to use your regular passport anyway.
Well, that would cut the second one, the optional passport one, would also function as a passport.
Oh, I see. So it would be coordinated with federal authorities?
Right. As I understand it, you know, being, you know, just a lowly citizen.
I see.
You would have a choice of the regular one, which would allow you to get into a federal building and to cross the board,
get on an airplane,
and the passport one. So you would probably have to pay extra for the passport one.
I see. All right. William Pound, this is, I guess, part of that group of things that very broadly fall under the rubric of immigration.
Well, immigration and homeland security, yes. She is correct. Several states are moving to a differentiated licensing system. The state that has so far gone the furthest with that is Washington, which has come to agreement along with British Columbia on an enhanced driver's license. Where the matter stands, though, is the federal governments of both countries have to agree to that, have to agree to what the province and the state have worked out. We'll see, I think, a lot of action in that area in the next year or two.
The most specific and perhaps the most controversial law on immigration that takes effect on January 1st is in Arizona. Joining us now is Daniel Gonzalez, an immigration reporter for the Arizona Republic, and he's on the line with us from his office in Phoenix, Arizona. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess the provision that is different and startlingly new is the degree to which business owners would be punished for knowingly hiring undocumented workers.
That's right, Neil. This is considered the harshest employer sanctions law in the country. Basically, it carries a death penalty for employers that are caught knowingly hiring illegal workers.
Death penalty in this case is a metaphor.
Yes, a metaphor, right. Death penalty in the sense that your business license would be revoked permanently if you're caught knowingly hiring illegal workers twice.
Twice. So there is a warning, and then the second time you would just lose your business license.
Well, no. The first case would be a suspension of business license of around 10 days, and then the second offense would be revocation of the business license permanently.
And what's been the response to this legislation?
Well, there's been all sorts of responses, especially from the business community, which is really shuddering at the thought of what this might mean to their ability to hire workers and also on the state's economy. As you probably know, Arizona has a very large illegal immigrant population. About 500,000 of the state's 6 million residents are illegal immigrants. That comes out to about 1 in 11 people in our state. And they also make up a very significant portion of the employees, but somewhere around 10 to 12% of our workforce, 3 million workforce, are illegal workers. So there's a potential that a very large segment of our, you know, working population could be removed from employment.
When we did a show down there in Arizona, we had a representative of the farming community on, and I don't think this is unique to Arizona, but he said that crops around the country are largely picked by illegal workers. And are farmers feeling the pinch especially here?
Oh, definitely. This is in Arizona. We have this southwest corner of the state. The Yuma area is the produce capital of the nation. If you're eating lettuce this winter, most likely it came from Yuma, Arizona. And a very significant percentage of those workers who pick that food are undocumented workers. Most of them working with fake papers to get jobs. And there's been a chronic labor shortage in that area for years because of changes in the workforce demographics. And now with the stepped-up in immigration enforcement and this new law that's about to take effect on January 1st, farmers are very worried about who's going to be picking that lettuce.
And also, I guess the phrase that a lot of people, or the word that a lot of people are going to be looking into very carefully is knowingly.
That's right, and that's going to be the real key of this law. It will be difficult. It's a high standard to prove that someone actually knowingly hired an illegal worker. But nevertheless, employers are very worried that even though that is the standard, they could get snared. They could be brought to show that they knowingly hired a worker. There could be someone, you know, within the company who claims that they overheard that kind of a conversation, and the penalty would be very severe. But that is the standard that you have to show that you actually knowingly hired an illegal worker, that you had knowledge.
Well, that may be difficult to prove. I guess we're going to have to wait and see on that.
Right. But one of the things that's happening because of that is employers who are very worried about potentially losing their license, they're calling in workers, reviewing their I-9 forms. Those are the forms that all employees have to fill out, showing that attesting that they have legal authorization to work in the United States. A lot of employers have been going through those records, reviewing them, and calling in employees where they think there might be some problem.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those workers in that process are admitting that they are illegal. Now those employers have that knowledge, so they're firing those workers on the spot. And that's has happened hundreds, if not thousands, of times in the last several weeks.
Including people who, I assume, have been working at some places for quite some time now.
Yes,
exactly. Is this being fought in the courts as well?
Yes, there's significant legal challenges. All the major business groups, the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, the Contractors Association, Restaurant and Hotel Associations, they have all banded together and filed lawsuits in federal court. The first lawsuit that was filed was tossed out on a technicality, and then it was refiled, and there was a request put in for a temporary restraining order that would have essentially barred the law from taking effect temporarily, but that was thrown out on Friday. So as it stands, it looks like the law will go forward. Those lawsuits will continue to make their way through the court system, but as it stands, it looks like we'll have this law in effect on January 1st.
Daniel Gonzalez, thanks very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Daniel Gonzalez of the Arizona Republic with us from his office in Phoenix. And William Pound, again, this just one of the laws that touches on immigration.
That's right. As I mentioned, there are just about 250 new immigration-related laws this year. A number of them are of that nature. Employer sanction are putting more burden on employers to make certain that the people they're hiring are here legally. But as I said, many others provide benefits ranging from a driver's license to try to get people to have insurance and on the roads, to educational benefits and in some cases health benefits.
Here's an email we have from Rich. California's minimum wage rises from $7.50 to $8. He notes tied with Massachusetts is the highest in the nation. Chicago imposes a 5-cent tax on bottled water. That's a 30% increase on the cost of a case, he notes. And New Hampshire begins recognizing same-sex civil unions with all the rights and privileges of married couples. And William Pound, this was, of course, the issue of a lot of legislation just a few years ago, and it continues to be.
It does. Not only New Hampshire, but Oregon has a law taking effect in the civil union area. We see the laws cover a wide range, and interestingly, they don't all become effective January 1st. We think about that because, as you mentioned at the beginning, the new year. But in fact, more laws become effective on other dates during the year, actually probably more on July 1st than on January 1st. But they cover.
They can pick any time they want to, right?
Yeah, the legislature, the state constitution may specify 60 or 90 days after adjournment of the legislature or after enactment, or the legislature may in many states put on what is called an emergency clause that says the law shall take effect upon signing by the governor.
Thanks very much. Our guest is William Pound. He's Executive Director of the National Conference of State Legislatures. We're talking about new laws that take effect across the country on January 1st. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let's go to Michael. Michael with us from Wasilla. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you did, actually. Wasilla, Alaska.
Okay, go ahead, please.
And our new laws in the state would be the new ethics laws that will keep our state legislators from getting too cozy with lobbyists in our state.
And this follows a grand and still evolving scandal involving one of the oil companies there.
We have lots of the corruption being exposed as we speak, and more to follow, I'm sure. We all are sure, but at least we're making a step in the right direction. And an effort to take that money out of the hands of politicians is being forwarded, and that is a fair elections referendum that would essentially fund the political campaigns and take the money away from lobbyists being able to provide that money to politicians.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Appreciate the phone call.
You bet.
Voting reform and ethics laws, is that a major area around the country, William Pound?
It certainly has been. Not only Alaska, but Oregon has an ethics law, much stronger ethics law for the legislature that they enacted, which will take effect. We've seen a lot of movement in that area in recent years, tightening up of what's acceptable, whether that be in terms of campaign contributions, placing limits on them, or particularly in terms of gifts to members, and also in how much time must go by when someone leaves the legislature before they may engage in lobbying activity. On the voting front, there's a lot of it. A lot of it has focused on voter ID. A number of states have enacted identification laws for voting. It is also related to primary elections, as well as we've seen the movement to this buildup in late January, early February of Super Tuesday or whatever it is, when so much of the presidential primary may be done.
Super
and that's
duper
almost
Tuesday,
all been
yes.
done by state legislation.
Yeah, and I gather a lot of states are enacting legislation to demand a paper trail from electronic voting machines.
Absolutely. We've seen it, not only legislation, but action by the secretaries of state to enforce it. Great concern over electronic voting, over the security of electronic voting, and the absence of the trail. And I think this coming year, with the being a major election year, you will see probably not so much action this year on it, but following the 2008 election, I would expect us to see another wave of it.
Here's an email we got from Dennis in Arkansas. All businesses of Arkansas will have to collect taxes at the point of delivery, i.e., if we deliver a product to any town in Arkansas, we have to collect taxes for the city, county, and the state tax rate and pay them to each municipality. Clearly, in many cases, it will take much more effort and dollars than collected. This will easily mean that even in a tiny state like Arkansas, we will have to track the tax rates in over 125 different localities. Doesn't sound like Dennis is too pleased about that. And this from Dick in Wagoner, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's passed a new law requiring proof of place of birth before eligibility for Medicare help. And I would guess, William Pound, that's yet another variant of people who are concerned about the citizenship of those who are getting those benefits.
That's right. Oklahoma has enacted one of the stricter laws as it relates to immigrants and benefits and employment.
I was interested on the health front that in South Carolina, hospitals will now have to show new parents a video on the dangers of shaking infants and the importance of child CPR. That's a cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And it must also be made available to all child care facilities. Do parents, new parents really pay a whole lot of attention to new videos, do you think?
I wouldn't have any idea, but it's clearly an attempt to deal with the problem that's perceived out there of injuries to newborns and infants and by people who may not have the requisite parenting skills, I guess.
William Pound, thanks very much. By the way, is there one law that strikes you as curious this January 1st?
Oh, not especially, I guess. There are all the laws that are out there got enacted because somebody asked for them. Some constituent came to a legislator and asked him to do that, or a group, or the legislator perceived a problem. And some of them are clearly much more broadly based and problems that we all might consider to be important, and others are narrow and affect only a few.
William Pound, thanks for your time. William
Thank
Pound,
you.
Executive Director of the National Conference of State Legislatures, joined us from KCFR, our member station in Denver, Colorado. Coming up, when a murderer seeks fame, it puts the media in an awkward situation. Should the names of murderers be published when notoriety is the motive? I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.